Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, April 26th. We have some special guests today who are going to gavel in the meeting for us.
Hey.
And he, is it Christopher? Is that just, Oh, Nicholas. You want him to talk? Nicholas is going to start, and he's brought his transformer and showed me how it works, and it's pretty cool. So it's bring your child to work day. So we have the special guests here who are going to gavel in the meeting and say their name. So here's the microphone. You want to go first? Was it Nicholas? Mm-hmm. Nicholas is going to go first. So say your name.
Nicholas. Nicholas
Hit
Ford.
Hit it right on there.
Nicholas
Ford. Awesome. That was awesome. And your transformer, do you want to introduce your transformer?
Yeah.
Does he have a name?
Well, he wakes up and loses his claw bucket. His claw can't do nothing. He can only pitch.
Oh, he's going to do it too. Okay, the transformer's, all right. Awesome, thank you so much. Okay, who wants to go next? Do you want to go next? There you go. Why don't you hand off the gavel and you can just hit that thing and say your name if you want to.
That was precedent setting.
Yes, it
never
was.
Had a transformer.
That was a transformer. Did you say your name? No? Do you want to? You can if you want. Okay, go for it. Here. Say your
name. My name's Colin.
Awesome. All right, now hit the gavel. Good job. All righty. Thank you so much. You want to go next? No? Ava, do you want to go next? Okay, great.
My name's Ava.
Good job. Thank you so much. You go next, Sophia?
My name's Sophia.
Good job. You want to go next? You can go next.
Milo.
Whoa. Whoa. Good. You get to be last. That's excellent.
I'm not going to say my name.
You don't have to say your name. Awesome. Good job. Thank you guys so much.
Hi.
You want to do it again?
Yeah.
Okay.
My name is Nicholas.
My name is, you can't do a lot of stuff. You have a bad talk toy.
Oh, good job, Nicholas. Thank you so much. You were excellent. You were all excellent.
Thank you.
Hey, enjoy
driving.
He's so cute.
He's a
handsome. Oh, I bet he is.
You
want to
say?
You want to talk a little bit? You want to say anything else? You want to talk about RAD policy? No? No? Okay. Well, you can stay up here if you want. But we're gonna get going on more less interesting stuff. But you can stay if you want.
Why don't you hand that back? Let's go.
Excellent. All righty. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate your joining us. Bye-bye. Good morning, everyone. Not only is it bring your child to work day, but it's also our first open meeting in our new building. So welcome to all of you who are joining us today for the first time. We're very excited about the new building, and we have a lot of amazing staff who have done such a fabulous job in getting us to where we are now. We have a few minor kinks that we're working out, and so we're going to have a little bit more of a formal thank you to the dedicated staff who have helped us at the next public meeting. But I just want to mention two people briefly, Ed Holder and India Robinson. India is in the back, and Dana Brown. I changed my mind, three people who have been particularly helpful in the move. And as I said, next time we'll do something a little bit more formal and talk about a little bit more about the new building and the things that they have done to get us to this point. So thank you to all of you. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, India. Thank you, Dana, and to everybody else. So we really appreciate it. Excellent. So the next matter on the agenda for today is the correction and approval of the minutes. Do we have a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move we approve the minutes.
Madam Vice Chair, could you?
Now we have.
Thank you.
I'll start all over again. I move that we approve the minutes for the meeting of January 25th, 2018, as set forth in agenda document number 18-13A, and the minutes for February 8th, 2018, as set forth in agenda document number 18-14A.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Without objection, we're going to get started on the Gilmore advisory opinion request. My understanding is that Mr. Gilmore is a professor, and he's teaching a class this morning, and so he requested that we do his matter first so that he won't be late to class.
Mr. Gilmore, are you with us?
Morning.
Welcome, Mr. Gilmore. Thank you for joining us this morning. We have a procedural motion we'll do really quickly, and then we'll turn to the substance of your request. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we waive the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we may consider agenda documents number 18-18A and 18-18B.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. And we are now ready to talk about draft advisory opinion 2018-03. And we have a presentation from the Office of General Counsel, Mr. Wenzinger. Did I say your name right?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 1818A and 1818B are draft responses to an advisory opinion request submitted by Michael Gilmore on behalf of his campaign committee. The requester asks whether the committee may use campaign funds to pay certain legal expenses of a lawsuit concerning the scheduling of a special election, and whether the value of any pro bono legal services provided in support of the litigation would constitute an in-kind contribution to the committee. Both drafts conclude that the committee may not use campaign funds to pay for the legal expenses because those expenses would exist irrespective of the campaign. Therefore, the use of campaign funds for that purpose would constitute an impermissible conversion of campaign funds to personal use. Both drafts also conclude that the value of any pro bono legal services provided in support of the litigation would not constitute in-kind contributions to the committee. The drafts differ slightly in the rationale for why the voluntary services would not constitute contributions. While both drafts conclude that the services would not be for the purpose of influencing the federal election, Draft A further concludes that even if the services were for such a purpose, they would nevertheless fall within an exemption to the definition of contribution. We received no comments on the request or on the draft, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. So as noted, we have two drafts in this advisory opinion request. Draft A was put out by my office, and Draft B was put out by the Vice Chair's office. We prefer Draft A, but took a look at Draft B, and we're okay with that and are willing to approve it today at the appropriate time. But does anybody have any questions of the requester or of the Office of General Counsel? Or comments? Okay, Mr. Gilmore, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the drafts, if you have any questions or comments.
Did not get a chance to look at the draft and did chance to glance at it and review the conclusion of the draft. My concern going through the various advisory opinions that I looked at, as well as the laws pertaining to the use of legal expenses, I think it was reflected in the drafts of the advisory opinion. Also, even though I did not get to look at those in depth, was very concerned that, even aside from this opinion, for future opinions, the separation between the legal deprivation that the lawsuit is purporting, separating that from the expense of litigation. And so I was concerned with the commission not separating the fact that although the incident would have existed irrespective of the campaign, the expense of the incident would not have existed. I don't think that was adequately addressed or recognized. And I think those are two things that should be separate. And I don't think that the opinion should be based on the existence of the legal controversy. The opinion should be based on the expense that is associated with the legal controversy, and that expense would not have existed but for my campaign.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Unfortunately, some of what you said was a little bit hard to hear, which isn't your fault. We're getting a new speaker system, and it should be in place, I believe, by the next open meeting. But thank you for your comment. Does anybody have any comment in response? Commissioner Peterson?
Just for the notes, just to note, it's a little hard to hear you guys on this end also. You guys, everybody just sounds so far away.
Okay. Sorry about that. Commissioner Peterson?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the concerns of the requester. When looking at this particular question, what it really boiled down to for me was whose expenses are at issue. Are they the expenses of the campaign committees, or are they the expenses of the citizen plaintiffs who claim to be suffering a constitutional injury as a result of the scheduling of the special election? And as is noted in the draft, since the candidate and the committee are not parties to the litigation, these are the expenses of a of these individuals, and for that reason, those did appear, and I think that as reflected in the draft, that those would have arisen irrespective of a candidacy. I understand the argument that this had you not been a candidate, then this lawsuit wouldn't have been brought. This may be a bad analogy, or it's not a precise analogy, but I was thinking of an example of what if there was a candidate in a district where there's a large employer and decided in order to generate recognition of this individual and raise his or her profile, they brought an employment discrimination class action against that employer that would not have, one could make the argument, but for my candidacy, I would have never brought this lawsuit up. But in that particular case, that's not being done on behalf of the candidacy. It's not being done on behalf of the committee, and it's the expenses of the if a campaign committee were attempting to pay for the legal expenses, those really are the expenses that should otherwise be borne by the plaintiffs. And so, if the facts were different here, and we don't have these facts before us right now, but if this were the if the committee itself were bringing a suit and claiming a constitutional injury as a result of the timing of this special election, and the candidate were going to represent the committee in the legal proceedings, then that may raise a different question. That's not the question before us. I don't want to attempt to answer that because we haven't had the benefit of our Office of General Counsel looking at that question and debating that. But I think that might present a different issue. But since the committee isn't involved, isn't a party in this particular matter, that's the reason why I'm comfortable with the conclusion that that is reflected in Draft B. And I'll be happy to support that when a motion is made.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Any other comments?
If it's okay, may I respond to Commissioner Peterson?
Sure.
I completely, really understand what you're saying. I appreciate it totally. But for the facts that, in facts, I did discuss substantially with your counsel that initially we were going to file the lawsuit under the name of the committee and me as a candidate. And it was but for a better basis. Initially, that's what the lawsuit was to be. However, strategically, we had a better legal standing by filing it not in the name of the candidate, but in the name of the citizens with the candidate at the council of record. So that was something that me and counsel have talked about, your counsel have talked about extensively in terms of the conversations that were had between myself and my attorney in coming to the conclusion of who served as parties for this lawsuit. It slightly changes the legal question of the lawsuit, but not immediately. And by taking out the committee as a plaintiff, you do lose a one legal perspective, but all of the other legal perspectives would have still been in there, as the citizens would have also been a plaintiff. So I just caution that be acknowledged in the future, because that is something that it would have been the reality here. but for a legal advantage not to.
Ms. Klopek?
Sure. Technical issues. I just want to clarify. I think Mr. Gilmore's statements about his choices of whether to be a plaintiff or not are also reflected in his request. I just like to clarify for the record, although he certainly conveyed that information to us, which obviously is in the request, we provided no guidance on how to pursue his lawsuit. We asked questions to try to understand the basis of their position, or the Mr. Gilmore's position, that these expenses would not exist irrespective of his candidacy. And so and his response to that is reflected in his request. But we certainly provided no suggestions about how they might go about structuring their lawsuit. And ultimately, as he's indicated, it was the choice of the requester to decide to have other individuals be plaintiffs rather than himself. I think he even indicated in the request that he, part of why he chose, or perhaps the reason he chose not to be a plaintiff, was inability to find other counsel to represent him. So I don't know that that really changes how the commission would analyze the question.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of Advisory Opinion 2018-03, Committee to Elect Michael Gilmore, as set forth in Agenda Document 18-18B.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gilmore, for your request and for joining us, and good luck with your class this morning.
Thank you so much for your accommodations. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks. So now we'll go back to the regular order of the agenda. And so the next matter on the agenda is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on McSally for Congress, MFC A15-04.
Madam Chair, would you like me to do all the other late submitted documents?
So sure.
That housekeeping matter out of the way. I move that we waive the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we may consider agenda document 18-17A, 18-19A. Do we have any other ones?
No, that's all.
Okay. That's it.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. So, Ms. Patius, are you going to give the
yes, thank you
the update today? Thank you very much. And I just wanted to note that we had an audit hearing on this matter in, I just lost the date, was it?
February 8th,
where yes. we talked pretty, you know,
correct,
extensively about some of these issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. The Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum, ADRM, for McSally for Congress, MFC, was circulated to the Commission on March 1st, 2018, for a vote. The ADRM includes the draft final audit report, DFAR, which was sent to the Committee and the Commission on October 18, 2017. The ADRM also provides an overview of the committee's responses to the issued DFAR and the audit hearing, which, as we mentioned a second ago, was held on February 8, 2018. In discussion with the commission offices, edits pertaining to finding one, misstatement of financial activity, and finding two, disclosure of occupation name of employer, were recommended for the proposed final audit report. The proposed final audit report will be the next report, which will be circulated after the approval of this ADRM. These edits were circulated to the Commission Secretary Office and all Commissioners' offices on April 11, 2018, from our Office of Compliance. The proposed edits, in part, are as follows. For finding one, we will insert within the proposed final audit report the following. The audit staff maintains MFC should follow the reporting guidance outlined in the campaign guide for congressional candidates and committees regarding the treatment of the two types of transactions discussed above. the campaign guide recommends disclosing voided transactions as negative entries within the identified receipt or disbursement categories. Following such best practices in the future will help ensure that MFC's reported financial activity is in agreement with its bank activity, resulting in no misstatement or reporting discrepancies. Moreover, utilizing these best practices will most likely prevent MFC from receiving the future request for additional information from the Commission's Reports Analysis Division. As for finding two, we will insert a proposed language changes within the proposed final audit report that highlights in part that MFC, quote, explain that it maintained best efforts and filed amended reports, end quote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And as you noted, you said that you talked to some offices about this. Thank you for your time. We spoke about this with some people in my office. And the goal was twofold. One, we weren't able to talk about this at the last open meeting because we had to cancel that meeting. And so my interest was in trying to move this forward as quickly as possible because, you know, we've been dealing with this issue for a while, and the audit hearing was in February. So one of the concerns that I had was what you just stated. The committee didn't follow the recommendation of the campaign guide, but the campaign guide states that it's a recommendation. So I wanted to put language in here really for the benefit of future committees to say, yeah, it says it's a recommendation, but if you do it our way, it'll save you a lot of trouble. And we might want to consider, you know, making it even a little bit more clearer in the future for people, but I wanted to let people know that life is easier if you follow this recommendation, even though it's not a requirement. And with respect to the other finding, we didn't think that this was it was just listening to counsel in the hearing and his submission. We thought it was more accurate to make the changes to the audit report to more clearly reflect what the committee had done. They had sent out some letters in advance of hearing from audit, and it was a little bit more of a fair representation of, in our view, in what happened. And thank you very much to the audit staff for taking the time to work with us on that. We did try to circulate it within the building to try to get it approved, and it wasn't approved, so here we are talking about it and happy to do so. Does anybody have any comments? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had approved the original report, so I hadn't realized that there were actually issues, that concerns that other commissioners had about this.
But we've heard about the concerns at the audit hearing in February, which we spent a lot of time. Those were the concerns that we were addressing February audit hearing.
Appreciate it. I thought it was important that if we were going to make changes, that it be done consistent with past practice at an open meeting in the interest of transparency. And I wanted to make sure that we were honoring our longstanding practice as negotiated painstakingly in Directive 70 by, I think, largely by Commissioner Peterson and Commissioner Bowerly's office way back when, that there are sections of the report that reflect the professional judgment of the auditors. And then there are other sections of the report where, obviously, commissioners can express their views, and ultimately we approve or don't all of the recommendations. So I wanted to make sure that we were not interfering with the auditors' professional integrity and judgment and their ability to express that in the report. And I've had some conversations with the audit staff. And I'll ask you to confirm publicly what you told me privately, that the changes do reflect your views.
Yes, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. That is correct. These are our views. We feel comfortable with these additions, and they reiterate what has, in our opinion, been stated already, and we are fine with those. Thank you.
And comfortable with it on those terms.
Thank you. As I mentioned, we were prepared to talk about this publicly at the last meeting, but we weren't able to have the meeting, so that's why I tried to do it via tally. And believe me, that audit has never changed anything at our request that they weren't comfortable with. Trust me, we've been, you know, there's many times where we don't agree with them, and we specifically ask them to only make changes that they felt comfortable with, and we would never request anything other than that. So with that, is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, I am going to make a motion, but I also, since you've said it twice now, I just want to state that I had suggested, when it turned out that I was going to have a conflict with the last meeting, that we could have moved the open meeting to the Tuesday when we already had a meeting noticed. And thanks in part to the chair's efficient management of the agenda, the executive's calendar that day, we were completed by lunchtime. So I think we could have done the two items that would have been on the agenda for the open meeting on Tuesday, 2 weeks ago. It was your choice to cancel the meeting, and I was okay with that.
Oh, that's unbelievable. That's just crazy. I mean, that's just really, I'm not going to get into a, you know, but that's just really unbelievable, and we'll leave it at that. It's unbelievable. The public meeting was voted on in back in December. I didn't realize you were going to miss the open meeting until Thursday late in the day. And at the last minute, you said, well, we could do it on Tuesday, but we had an extensive executive session agenda on Tuesday.
Which we finished by lunchtime.
Well, that's because we had worked, we worked on a lot of things in advance to try to make it efficient, but there's no guarantee of that. Sometimes it takes a lot longer than we think. And I figured, well, we could do this on tally, as I just said. And that didn't work because you wanted to talk about it in public. But to suggest that because of me, we weren't able to do it that week is really unbelievable. Is there a motion?
There is a motion. With respect to the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on McSally for Congress, A15-04, I move that we approve the recommendations as set forth in Agenda Document 18-15-A.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
The motion passes unanimously, and Steve even voted twice. Thanks, Steve.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just a parliamentary inquiry. Did the motion include the capture the edits that were reflected in the email that?
The motion, as stated, did not include.
Oh, okay. I thought that the document in front of us already had incorporated that. So let me. I will ask a parliamentary inquiry as to how I can. That was the intent, was to capture the edits that were the edits reflected in a public document.
The edits were reflected in part in the email that was actually sent to the commissioner offices on April 11th, and then we went through some of the proposed edits in detail just briefly ago.
All right. So if I amended the motion to stay as amended and amended as discussed at the table, since I believe you read all the edits, Ms. Bacious, right? Would that work?
Say without objection.
Just to highlight, finding two, we did not read all the edits. We just gave an overview of it. We did not go in detail.
All right. Well, it was intended to incorporate those edits and... without objection, I would like it to be interpreted that way. Does that work?
Yes. Yes. OGC says yes. Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing that up, Commissioner Peterson.
Sure.
Yep. Thank you. All righty, then. The next matter on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2018-02, Alabama Academy of Radiology and ALRADPAC. My understanding is that the requester is not joining us.
That's correct.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay. Do we have a presentation from the Office of General Counsel, Mr. Buckley?
Thank you, Chair Hunter. You. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Agenda document 18-17-A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by the Alabama Academy of Radiology and the Alabama Academy of Radiology PAC, also known as ALRAD PAC, a committee organized under Alabama state law and active in Alabama state and local elections. The requester asks whether, under commission regulations, the Academy is a membership organization, whether ALRAD PAC may convert from a non-federal committee to a federal separate segregated fund, whether ALRAD PAC, as a federal committee, may retain all of its current cash on hand, provided it divests itself of the fair market value of payroll deduction services provided by participating corporations Employing Academy members, and whether the Academy may solicit future contributions to All Red Pack using its proposed payroll deduction program. The draft concludes that the Academy is a membership organization under the Commission regulations and that All Red Pack may convert from a non-federal committee to a federal SSF. The draft also concludes that All Red Pack may maintain its current cash on hand once it divests itself of impermissible funds, including donations that fail to comply with the Act's source and amount restrictions, the fair market value of payroll deduction services provided by participating corporations, and funds that were solicited in a manner that does not comply with the Act and Commission regulations. In addition, the Academy and All Red Pack must notify donors of the proposed change in their use of funds and allow them to object to that use. Finally, the draft concludes that the Academy may solicit future contributions using its existing payroll deduction program as long as it makes changes proposed in the request. The Commission did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft. I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Are there any questions or comments? There's only one draft, as noted. So is there a motion, Madam Vice Chair?
There is indeed, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission approve Advisory Opinion 2018-02 to the Alabama Academy of Radiology and ALRAD PAC as set forth in agenda document number 18-17-A.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. The next matter on the agenda we're not going to get to today. As noted on the agenda, it'll be held over to the next public meeting. We are working on it. It seems like we'll have two different drafts for that advisory opinion request, and I anticipate that both of those drafts will be released fairly quickly in order for the requester to have some time to look at the drafts before the next public meeting. We probably could have had those out last night, but it wouldn't have given the requester enough time to. Well, we may have had them out last night, maybe not. At least it's anyway. So this will give the requester more time to take a look at it, and it does look like we're going to have two drafts, but we shall see. Thank you. So the next matter on the agenda is Advisory Opinion 2018-05, Caring Scent LLC. And do we have Mr. Wilson with us? Oh, there you are. Okay. Feel free to join at the table if you would like, Mr. Wilson.
Morning, Commissioner.
Morning. How are you?
Good.
We'll start off first with a presentation from Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Chair Hunter, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is Agenda Document 18-19-A, a draft advisory opinion responding to a request from Caring Scent LLC. The requester asks several questions about the application of the Act and Commission regulations to the requester's proposal to offer contribution processing services to political committees. First, the draft concludes that Caring Scent would not make a contribution to a political committee because Caring Scent would be acting as a commercial vendor and would charge the usual and normal charge for its services. Second, the draft concludes that as a commercial vendor, Caring Scent would not be required to register or report as a political committee or to report as a conduit or intermediary. Finally, the draft concludes that Caring Scent's proposed services would comply with the provisions of the Act and Commission regulations relating to the forwarding of contributions to political committees. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft. Thank you, and I would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Mr. Wilson, have you had a chance to review the draft, and do you have any questions?
I have. I don't have any questions. I think this is a fairly straightforward request. The draft looks great. I don't have any comments on it. I think that the only distinction here between the proposal of Caring Scent and some previous advisory opinions concerning Roundup, I know that Roundup-type services, I know the Commission has had some questions in the past about which political committees a vendor may provide services to. Here, the vendor will provide services to a range of political committees regardless of political affiliation. The other distinction here is that Caring Scent does view its platform as a service to those political committees, So the difference between the amount that a political committee has in its pocket and the amount of the original contribution will be reported as an expenditure from the political committees in this instance. So it's different than those situations where a vendor is trying to offer service to donors as opposed to committees. So with all that being said, I think it's pretty straightforward. I agree wholeheartedly with the draft. I think it's a good draft advisory opinion. I would answer any questions.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? How do you like the new building?
It's a real upgrade.
You found us okay? Okay, good to hear. All right, is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was a little surprised when you started to talk, Mr. Wilson, you know, since you were getting the answer that you wanted. Sometimes it's better to quit with your head.
Yeah.
But we appreciate your elaboration on the differences in the facts here and some previous AOs. I agree with you. I think it was a pretty uncontroversial request and response. Having said that, I move approval of Advisory Opinion 2018-05 to Caring Scent LLC, as set forth in Agenda Document Number 18-19-A.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. Going back,
and tell all your friends about the new building.
So going back to something that the Vice Chair brought up a minute ago, you said, Madam Vice Chair, that you had suggested moving some of the matters to have an open meeting after the executive session.
Actually, I was thinking before, but either way.
Before the executive session? But I just remembered, I didn't remember this at the time that you said that, because I just didn't anticipate that, that you told me that Tuesday that you had to leave early because your flight left Dulles at, I think it was 5:30 on Tuesday. And so you asked, obviously you had to make the flight, get their traffic 2 hours early. So I think you said you had to leave at 1:30.
No, that was...
or 2 o'clock? What time did you want to leave?
I play it closer to that when I'm catching planes, but I think we still would have had time.
Oh, okay. So despite the fact that you needed to leave that day, and I was very accommodating and really worked hard to try to get it done so you could leave on time. And I remember you said, I'm glad that we're done now because I can also have lunch before I go to the airport. So I just would appreciate, you know, if we're going to, you know, get into all the details, I don't know that that's going to end well for certain people, but I'm trying to keep it real and wanted to make sure that we correct the record on that. I could go into greater detail, but I'll spare everybody that. Continuation. So moving right along, the next matter on the agenda is internet communication disclaimers, illustrative examples. So this is something, as you all may recall, we approved, I'll wait a minute to allow Mr. Stefanovich and Jessica Selikoff to join us. Welcome. So we approved a notice of proposed rulemaking, I believe it was on March 18th. Is my memory correct? Something like that. It was published in the Federal Register on Monday, March 28th, and I'm taking a look at the proposed rules. We hopefully will receive a lot of comments. I believe the deadline is May 17th. Do I have that right?
May 25th.
May 25th. Sorry about that. So the comment deadline is May 25th. Again, hope we get a lot of great comments. We also have a hearing scheduled in late June. We're looking forward to that. We received a comment recently from several Democratic senators, and part of their comment was that they were shocked that there were two different alternatives proposed, which I thought was a little odd because I thought, you know, that's sort of how we've always operated, at least since I've been here. We often have a notice of proposed rulemaking with more than one option because different people think differently. And so we give the public some options and say, which one do you prefer? And as we've both highlighted numerous times, we also want to say, don't think it has to be one or the other. It could be a little bit of this. It could be a little bit of that. So take these two examples and think about it. One of the reasons, which I think I said at the public meeting when we adopted this, that Commissioner Peterson and I were the sort of proponents of Alternative B, was because Alternative A's standard was that you have to have the disclaimer in the ad unless it doesn't fit. And what we said to our colleagues, you know, at a couple of several meetings on this subject was, we just didn't think that was an objective measure for determining whether or not your disclaimer should be on the ad. And, you know, obviously they could put out whatever proposal they want, and they did so. But we were looking for something that was a little bit easier for the public to understand, something more objective. So the proposal that we put in alternative B was, if your disclaimer is more than 10%, wait, am I saying it right? Then you, if the disclaimer takes up more than 10% of the ad, then you can move on to an alternative disclaimer. And then there's more to it than that, but that's just sort of the big picture view. So I thought it was useful to have another alternative out there. We also talked about this at the open meeting where we adopt the NPRM, that we would come up with examples. And I think we all agree, and we said so at the time, that having examples of how the different proposals would work in real life would be helpful to the public and would be helpful for people writing comments. And so we all tried hard to try to get that done in advance of that the public meeting where we adopted this. We weren't able to do so, but we committed to working on it to get something out as soon as possible. Unfortunately, as you'll see from the agenda, we don't have anything circulated yet. My colleague, the vice chair, tells me that she is committed to continuing to work on it, and I take her at her word. So hopefully we will have something very soon. I'd like to, sorry I didn't tell you I was going to do this in advance, but I'd like to try to come up with sort of a time frame, because I want to get something out to the public so they have enough time to look at the examples before they submit their comments. And Jessica, what was the deadline again? May 25th. So if we could commit to have something out by next week, you know, could we try to do that maybe by next Thursday?
I'm certainly happy to work towards that goal. I had as you know, I had a long conversation with somebody on your staff yesterday about that, and suggested that since next week we don't have meetings, that would be a good time to really dig in and focus on it. The document, the draft that I was reviewing last night, did not seem to be in a place where I thought it would actually be helpful yet.
What about it? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, there are, it's kind of hard to talk about a document that nobody has seen yet, but there were a number of examples where questions were asked underneath the example as to whether it would comply with the regulation in alternative A or alternative B, and some of the answers were maybe. And I didn't think that would be terribly helpful to folks out there for us to put out examples and say, well, here are some examples, but we're not actually sure how the reg text would apply to them. So I'd like to work on trying to come up with some consensus on how the proposals actually do apply in each of the examples, because I think that would be much more helpful.
I think what you're referring to is the part about whether or not a disclaimer is clear and conspicuous. Mm-hmm. I believe that's the only place where our version says maybe, and I can explain that. I appreciate your letting us know that, because if that's the threshold issue, and it doesn't, obviously I'm willing to work with you for a little bit longer on this, but at some point, I think I'll just put out my examples. I'd rather not do that, but if that's the issue, we may be forced to do that, because the clear and conspicuous standard is in the regulation now, as you know, and it is not terribly objective. I mean, I don't know how you could characterize it as an objective standard. Clear and conspicuous. It's a little bit of a note when you see it kind of thing. I don't know if you were involved with writing the regulation.
Probably not. I think that one's an old one.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty old regulation. We decided not to put that regulation as part of this NPRM. Maybe we should have. That may have been the right thing to do, but we didn't do that. And so that old regulation of whether or not something is clear and conspicuous is baked in this regulation, but we haven't noticed that. And so what one of our proposals says is it shows a disclaimer. We have an example of an ad for the benefit of the public with a disclaimer on there that is within the 10%. And we had a couple different people in the office look at it, in my office, and Some people thought it was clear and conspicuous, and others weren't so sure. And this is looking at the reg, and we're obviously here working at the commission. And I think it's fair to say it's not perfectly clear whether or not something is clear and conspicuous. And so for us, that answer helps determine whether or not you move to the next step. So if we say it is clear and conspicuous, then the full disclaimer stays on there. But you may have a lawyer or a campaign or a committee out there who looks at that and says, gee, even though someone thinks that's clear and conspicuous, it's possible that a different commissioner or a different set of commissioners or a different staffer in the Office of General Counsel might not think it is. So in my mind, this lawyer may say, I'm going to say it's not clear and conspicuous, and I'm going to go to a different disclaimer, which is provided in the alternative disclaimer, which is provided in both alternative A and alternative B. So that's the reason that it's in there, and happy to talk about it, but it's not something that I think we're going to solve within a week, whether or not we can determine what's clear and conspicuous or not. I don't think that we're going to solve that within the next year.
Well, that's interesting. It is part of our existing regulations, and one of the alternatives that we put out for public comment relies on that, sort of incorporates that standard. And I think ultimately we as a commission have to be able to say whether something complies with our regulations or doesn't. So it's, and we have disagreed sometimes, this is true, we have disagreed sometimes on whether something is clear and conspicuous, but this is a legal issue that gets presented to the commission. People file complaints saying their disclaimer was not, somebody else's disclaimer was not clear and conspicuous. So we have to be in a position to say one way or the other, it is or it isn't. And I think for us to put out, again, if our goal is to show people how the rules work, how the proposals might work in practice, I think for us to put something out and say, well, maybe it would work this way, or maybe it would work that way, maybe you'd have to have a full disclaimer, or maybe you'd have to have maybe you could go to the adapted disclaimer. I personally don't think that's a good way of writing regulations, to say we're putting out a regulation, but we don't think we can interpret our own regulation. That could be a problem going down the road.
Well, if somebody submitted an advisory opinion request saying, is this clear and conspicuous, then yes, we would have to make that decision, and we would presumably have a vote on it. And shockingly, it's possible that it could deadlock. And so in that case, the person may not get an answer. The person may not want to file an advisory opinion. And so we're not saying that we're incapable of making that decision. We're saying that this isn't an advisory opinion request. This is a set of examples, and different people could look at it in different ways. I mean, there could be different staffers. There could be different commissioners. We're just trying to, keep that so that we haven't had a formal vote on each of the examples. And so, again, you may have a different view of clear and conspicuous than I do. And so we're just trying to say, these are sort of a menu of options within the examples.
Well, I'll just say that I look forward to continuing to work with you to try and come up with something that we both feel good about and that we feel would be helpful to folks who are trying to comment on the reg text.
Okay, and then the other issue, as you know, is whether it fits the language that you have in your in alternative A. We would like for the examples to properly analyze the examples with the reg text that's proposed, because that obviously is how somebody would analyze it. They would look at the reg text to find out whether or not they need to put a full disclaimer or not. So that's something that's, as you know, because we've talked about it for weeks now, that's something that is important to us.
Well, we'll try and work that out.
Okay. Oh, I'm so excited. All righty. Any other comments on this? You staying out of this, Jessica?
Indeed.
Probably a good plan. All righty. Stay tuned. The next matter on the agenda is Directive 10, Section L, Special Rules When the Commission Has Fewer Than 4 Members. So I asked to put this on the agenda, And in the attached memo to putting Directive 10 on the agenda, I note that I just recently asked the Office of General Counsel to prepare a memorandum, going through the different parts of subsection L. And I realize that some of the portions in Directive L are in there because it might be legally permissible for fewer than four commissioners to decide things, but it may not be, from a policy perspective, it may not be something that we all agree with. Directive 10 is already, properly enacted, and it'll take four votes to change it. But I don't want to prejudge it because I would like to wait for the Office of General Counsel's memo on it, and I'm doing a little bit of research on my own since the directive was adopted in 2007, I think it was.
The end of 2007.
The end of 2007 when the commissioners who were there then anticipated that there would be a lack of quorum. So that section was adopted. I, from a policy perspective, I don't necessarily agree with all the things that are in there, but I will refrain from going through all of that now and look forward to hearing from the Office of General Counsel. And there's been some intervening things that have happened since then. I think, there's a couple of court cases that we all want to take a look at. And also, I think that it's probably fair to say, I'll just speak for myself, that some of what we've done here at the commission has probably moved a little bit more into the category of the commission, making decisions on this. And one example is Directive 70, where we changed the audit process to make sure that the document coming out of the agency was a commission document. And we, audit still has an opportunity to give their say to it. But that's just one example, and there's several others through directives and policies that have happened over the past few years where the commission, I think it's fair to say, has moved toward making it more making more things a commission decision. One example is that recently the department, just in the past few days, and I think the letter may have gone out today to the Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, on whether or not our employees can participate in the census. And it doesn't violate any of the rules that permit certain people from having a second job because we're federal employees and all this kind of stuff. But the secretary from the Department of Commerce asked if it would be okay for them to ask our employees to participate in the census. And the language in the request says that the statute deems it okay as long as the agency head has reviewed it and found it to be okay. Our recent advice from the Office of General Counsel was that we should get four votes. That they told me that I couldn't say that was okay to allow our employees to participate in the census without a vote of the commissioner, which of course I was fine with, and we circulated it on tally, and my understanding is that it passed. So that's just one example of, and that's subsection L3N of Directive 10, I believe I said that properly, of a place where recent advice was that you should have four votes for that sort of thing. And so that might be something we want to consider removing from this, because obviously if four votes are required, then it shouldn't be allowed to happen without a quorum. And again, some of these are policy calls that I look forward to talking about with my colleagues and determining whether or not we should make changes to the directive. One other reason that I put it on the agenda is we had a recent report from the Congressional Research Service, Mr. Sam Garrett, I don't know if he's here today, put out a report recently, and so it made me think about this, and I'm not aware of any of us leaving imminently.
I was wondering if congratulations were in order, Madam Chair.
No, not imminently, and so I thought this might be a good place for us to just plan ahead. It's always good to have a contingency plan, just like you guys did when you did this back in the day. And so I thought it would be useful to talk about it and do it in a public way. So.
Well, I might comment that there was some certainty about it at that point. You may recall it was the end of our for me, and the reason the number went down was because we were recess appointees. And so there was really no discretion there.
Yeah, gotcha.
I remember it very well.
I think you're right. There's not that same certainty this time, but nevertheless, I thought it was good to have the discussion. In the event that it happens, we'll be more prepared. Any comments, Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to know. We were curious. The changes to this directive from 2007 were, of course, made with the full advice of the Office of General Counsel. They were fully vetted by the Office of General Counsel. If anything, commissioners at the time, I think, narrowed the range of activities that at the time it was thought that we could have put on the list. We wanted to be fairly conservative. It was adopted by a unanimous vote, obviously bipartisan, of all five commissioners who were then on board, and was indeed done in December of 2007 with some degree of trepidation about what was going to happen come January of that year, when it turned out there were only two of us left standing. And the goal was to make sure that the staff would have appropriate direction, and that the database would stay current, and that to the extent that the agency could function, obviously couldn't make any policy decisions or anything that requires four votes under the statute, but to the extent that we could keep the agency operational, at least at the staff level, that would be a good thing. And like, I think, every other directive, it was adopted by commissioners after internal discussion. I don't believe we've ever put a directive out. It's an internal directives guide our internal policies and practices. I don't think we've ever put a directive out for public comment. I'm not sure that would be a useful thing to do, and I'm certainly not committing to approving putting it out for public comment or going through a more of a rulemaking style procedure on this. If you want to ask the Office of General Counsel for a memo, you're of course welcome to do so. Any commissioner is. I'll be interested in reading it, but I'm just not sure where it goes from there.
I think I don't know why we would treat this differently and not want comment from the public on this. I wasn't really envisioning a formal NPRM style type of thing, but to the extent people have comments about it, I'm sure that I for one would be more than interested in hearing it. Obviously, if the commission lacks a quorum and operates for any amount of time, it affects the public, and the public still, you know, has to comply with the laws and all the rest of it. So they seem like the perfect type of people to hear from. I know from my perspective, you know, I obviously wasn't on the commission when this happened, and I'll just tell you, people were not happy with a lot of the things that happened when there was a lack of quorum, and I still hear about it from certain members of the public. They didn't think it appropriate for two commissioners to hold a meeting, and they didn't think it appropriate for certain staff to be hired. And there were a lot of things that people were disappointed about. I know that there were some things in here that Commissioner Mason just could have done and decided not to. You know, there were certain things where he had said, you know, I think it appropriate to wait for the new commissioners to come in. And I appreciated it. And maybe you agreed with him. I don't know. And I appreciate that. I think that was the right call. I know that, you know, for example, just on subsection A, L3A campaign guides. As the vice chair knows, we've had a lot of disagreement on some of the language, you know, specifically about court cases and other things that have held up certain revisions to campaign guides. And I don't think that would be a proper thing to do without a lack of quorum, just as a policy matter. Even if the Office of General Counsel, I anticipate they probably will say that's okay to do. Regardless of that, I don't. Those are the kinds of things that, you know, as you know, it takes a lot of time and energy to agree on language that we can all agree on. And I don't think it makes sense to, you know, as soon as there's a lack of quorum, all of a sudden campaign guides are going out, people are being hired, you know, that sort of thing. So I'd like to look at it, you know, with that in mind, and I'm happy to hear any comments from members of the public. And if they'd like to comment, you know, even now, there's nothing that stops people from sending an email to the commission just, you know, giving us their thoughts. I think that would be very useful. Any other comments? Okay. So the next matter on the agenda is management management and administrative matters. And believe it or not, there is one this time. Ms. Ciccona, who heads up our reports analysis division, thank you for joining us this morning. So our administrative matter is something that we recently approved. Was that 2 days ago? In executive session, can I say that? Can I say we approved that in executive session? Okay. So we just did that, and so a record article came out yesterday about it, and we've already received a few questions, so I thought it might be a good idea to ask Debbie to give us an update on what her fine team has done. We appreciate it very much, and you did it very quickly and in a way that you were able to garner, can I say, 4 votes? Yeah, we got, well, obviously we got 4 votes for it. We voted on it. So, Ms. Ciccona, thank you. Please let us know about the new development.
Sure. Good morning, commissioners. The Reports Analysis Division amended Standard 26, covering personal use of campaign funds, of the 2017-2018 cycle review and referral procedures to address dormant Title 52 authorized committees of former federal candidates and office holders. These revisions were made to ensure the activity disclosed meets the regulatory standards for permissible use. Committees of former candidates who did not campaign or hold office during the previous 2-year cycle for House candidates or 4-year cycle for Senate and presidential candidates will be subject to this review. The revisions include sending a letter to these committees that will request clarification of the status of the candidate and the committee, clarification of certain activity disclosed, and will explain the guidelines for permissible uses of campaign funds for winding down and termination. The review will be conducted semi-annually and will begin with the 2018 October quarterly report covering July 1st, 2018 through September 30th, which is due on October 15th of 2018. The revisions will be included in the redacted version of the 2017-2018 RAD review and referral procedures and posted on the FEC website in the near future. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, and thank you again to you and your team for doing this for us. Any questions, Madam Vice Chair?
Not a question, just a comment. I also want to thank Ms. Ciccona for her quick and, as always, excellent work on this issue. I appreciate the fact that commissioners were all on board with this whole concept of providing better guidance in this issue of what I think have been come to be known in the public as zombie PACs. There have been some articles in the press about that that I think raised some concerns, and I'm glad to see us taking some action to try and get some better guidance out there and try and make sure that committees are on notice about all the rules.
Thank you very much. Mr. Palmer, are there any other management and administrative matters?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you. Thanks for coming, everybody. This meeting is adjourned.